Hi, I'm Ashley Gallagher from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insight, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. On this episode, Aislinn Antrim of Pharmacy Times spoke with Anthony Puddelo, Executive Director of the Tennessee Pharmacists Association, on his presentation at the National Association of Chain Drugstores 2023 Regional Chain Conference about pharmacy leadership and state-level shifts.
So pharmacies have been at the forefront of a million issues in the last few years, so your session covers quite a lot. Can you kind of give me a high-level overview of kind of the key things that attendees are really going to hear about?
Yeah, I'm really excited to be able to speak to this group. How I've been looking to frame my comments and what we're going to be focusing on is probably three buckets of areas that I would say state pharmacy associations have really been helping the profession in the last couple of years. You know, you can definitely bundle one whole area around legislative initiatives, whether it's been looking at effective and enforceable reform of pharmacy benefit managers to scope of practice expansion, as well as payment for services. Those are kind of where you see a lot of states really driving initiatives for the profession. I think some of the other pieces too is that we're going to look at, you know, as we pass legislation at the state level, you know, how do you ensure that that legislation is effectively implemented at the frontline level, right? So when it comes down to, say, for example, that scope of practice and payment for services, what are pharmacy associations doing with community pharmacies specifically in this case for getting pharmacists comfortable with establishing, say, a collaborative practice agreement? Where and how do you go about that? From there, what about getting a pharmacist properly credentialed in order to be recognized and be able to get contracts to bill for medical services or bill for their services on the medical benefit of some of these insurance companies? And so we'll talk through some of that. Tennessee specifically has had some success in the last several years. States like Washington State as well have had success on the commercial side. But we're also seeing a lot of states have success with their Medicaid programs. So we're going to talk through what pharmacists and what pharmacy leadership can do to continue to help drive that. And then really the last bucket is just like, where are we going, and talking about various practice-based initiatives where some states are having success securing, whether it's a contract directly with their state Department of Health, or if it's with other grant opportunities to really help look at advancing the profession forward and utilizing the entire team. So I know we're likely going to spend some time talking about the role of the pharmacy technician, whether it's in workflow models like technician product verification or pharmacy technicians playing roles with immunization expansion in states. We've seen a lot of these opportunities come forward because of the pandemic, but so much was there before the pandemic. And now, you know, where do we go? How do we kind of come out of the pandemic stronger and in these pharmacy practice settings?
Wonderful. So PBM reform is always front of mind for pharmacy leaders, and there seems to have been some real legislative shifts in the last, you know, few years, particularly at the state levels. So how do you see this issue shifting, and is this real change, or is this kind of baby steps?
It's a great question. You know, unfortunately, I think we always have to talk about PBM reform as a whack-a-mole type mentality, the old game at the fair, where you're basically, once you think you figured out what is going on with PBMs, something else is going to arise. And so I would say, you know, the conversations that are happening at the state level are very much like that. But really, the messaging and the focus isn't just bringing PBM reform at the state level into law. Similarly, we have seen great success across the whole country. You can, point to the fact of the Rutledge PCMA Supreme Court ruling that really dictated that pharmacies, or excuse me, that states can regulate PBM reform at the state level. So a lot of state associations have been driving this, really trying to spotlight every type of detrimental practice that we've seen by PBMs. But the problem is enforceability. And that's where a lot of states are spending a lot of time right now, whether it's messaging to their state legislature, whether it's messaging to if it's their Commerce and Insurance Division, or if some states regulate underneath the Board of Pharmacy, how do we actually see the regulatory agencies go to bat for the profession and hold PBMs accountable for the laws that are on the books? We've had some really great success in Tennessee in the last year, and even in the last few weeks as our law took effect, we have been seeing our state Commerce and Insurance Division actually actively pushing back on PBMs for once on the rhetoric that they share why they don't need to comply with the law. And so, I think the tide is turning for once that these PBMs will finally start adhering to the laws that are on the books. But at the same time, I think what we're always going to have to address is while the microscope is very much, or the magnifying glass is on PBMs, there's a lot of other players in the whole drug distribution system that there needs to likely be a little bit more magnifying glass on those. And that goes from manufacturers to wholesalers to PSAOs to PBMs to the pharmacies themselves. And so we're going to likely, the moment you open Pandora's box, this question is going to arise about every aspect of the drug supply chain, is going to have a little bit closer look and see, should there be regulation on certain things? Should there not be? And that's going to be some of the conversation that I think everyone's going to have to start having at the state level.
Definitely. How can pharmacists get involved in PBM reform and advocate for the profession if that's something that they want to do?
Well, definitely get involved. This conversation on PBM reform is happening in every state. And my colleagues, I don't think there's anyone that's not having to talk about this, whether they want to or not. I think some of us want a little bit of break from time to time and talk about some of these other exciting things. But no, I would say what we really have been encouraging our members to do is, well, first and foremost, they have to work to develop a relationship with their elected officials on the Senate and House side, at the state and even federal level, is to be a voice for what's happening in your practice, be a voice for your patients, and really start filing complaints. That's really where I think a lot of concern comes into play, is if you pass a piece of legislation, or even if you don't, is the state actually hearing from pharmacists about it? Or are we just talking to each other that these are concerns? No, take the time, file a formal complaint with your state insurance division or whoever regulates PBMs, be a voice for your practice. Those kind of complaints are actually extremely helpful then for us at the state association level to then carry that message as we work and meet with those regulatory boards, or as we're testifying in front of an open hearing with them, that pharmacists are seeing this. And so we need pharmacists to be a loud voice in that process. And then at the same time, I think what we're starting to see is how and what is the messaging to patients in terms of engaging them in their defense, if you will, for the profession. Why do they want to still keep coming to their local pharmacy? What is the value that that local relationship has when they get to choose which pharmacy they go to? And so I know for us, we're going to start having to drive messaging to the media and to the public about what are the rights of a patient. When should they take that letter that they got in the mail from a PBM and take that and file a complaint themselves to the insurance division? So those are the kind of things that I say pharmacists need to understand the process and the messaging. And that's where the state associations and our national associations can all help in that process.
So as we're settling into the new reality of COVID-19, we're kind of in this endemic phase. We're all somewhat used to it now. Pharmacist-administered vaccines have been a huge piece of getting us here. But the PrEP Act is set to expire later this year, which could affect pharmacy vaccinations, not just COVID, in states where that hasn't been kind of codified and solidified. So how would that affect vaccination access?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the work and what we saw from the PrEP Act has really helped streamline and even standardize the expectations of the public for where and how they can receive vaccinations from their local pharmacy, whether that is by the pharmacists, student pharmacists, or pharmacy technicians. And I know a lot of states throughout the pandemic have had to have that thorough conversation in their state to say, how do we ensure a lot of this is still able to occur? So many practice settings have worked really diligently to make vaccines a core function, a core service within their communities. And so if you all of a sudden go and tell pharmacies, we're not going to do that now because the authority isn't there, we're going to take a lot of steps back as a profession. And so I know a lot of state associations, myself included, were actively looking to say, where is there opportunities? Do we need to pass legislation, or is the legislation, the act of actually giving vaccines, broad enough in your state code that maybe this is just a regulatory question and asking assistance of your board of pharmacy to update rules, or if it's actually more of an emergency order, an ongoing order by your health department to grant pharmacists that authority. And I think at the same time, while authority to do these things is great, it's the payment side. So how are we ensuring that pharmacists are properly being given not just reimbursement for the vaccine itself and the administration, but there's a service, there's an evaluation of need. And even many times pharmacies are doing a comprehensive vaccine assessment with those consultations for if it's just their COVID vaccine or their influenza vaccine. And so how do we ensure that payers are seeing the value of pharmacists actually moving the needle in our states for from a public health perspective? That's something we were going to talk about as well, is that we're driving some of those initiatives here in the state of Tennessee as well. We have an initiative with our health department that is looking to see where pharmacies can really help move the needle from overall vaccine effort. We've targeted 75 pharmacies in some of our most rural communities in the state, where rates have really been pretty dismal from not just COVID-19 vaccinations, but other vaccinations as well. So using and leveraging that trusted relationship that the pharmacist has with their community to help drive and really try to overcome the misinformation and the hesitation for towards vaccinations. So there is, like I said, there's the scope piece, there's the reimbursement piece, and there really is just that ongoing question of how do we help continually drive and educate on vaccinations across all of the various CDC, FDA approved vaccinations on the market.
Absolutely. You've kind of touched on this, but are there pushes to either extend the PrEP Act or federally codify this ability, or kind of what are the possible solutions here?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think we will see, obviously, the public health emergency federally will eventually be lifted. The PrEP Act has an expiration date, and but I would say what really it comes down to is state authority. Vaccine authority has always been really granted and leveraged at the state level. So I think that's really the conversation that pharmacists are having and the associations are having is the scope, the full scope. Is there an age limitation? Is there, what are all the steps that pharmacists need and technicians might need to really be able to drive this? So everything really has happened at the state level to take what the PrEP Act has done to then let it happen before it expires to see what we can do at the state level. So I hopefully that answers your question on
Yes, it does. Perfect.
that.
Provider status has been an area with lots of action and interest for a very long time now. Do you see real shifts in this area? Could this be actually coming?
Good question. I feel like anytime I talk about provider status, I'm trying not to jinx myself or our efforts that we're seeing in our state, because provider status, as I referenced earlier, provider status is kind of this. There's this like trinity when you think about it. There's literally just being knighted, if you will, and appointed, if you will, that pharmacists are truly recognized as healthcare providers in code. They're just whether it's to be listed in your state law. When anytime there's a reference to providers, pharmacists, it should be just known that they're providers. There's that side of it. There's the scope side of it. So there is obviously some limitations and some and how some state laws are written in terms of what pharmacists can do and what they can do independently, what they can do in conjunction with a supervising provider or prescriber. And then there's the payment side, right? And so I think a lot of states are having successes in really all of those areas, with more and more of the focus being on the payment for services. And states like Tennessee and Washington State are having some great success that we're sharing as much as we can with other states. I was just having conversations this last week with some counterparts in one of my neighboring states about, some of our lessons learned over the years. And so there's that side, but we're having more success right now with our commercial plans, right? A lot of states we're seeing more and more efforts with their state Medicaid programs. To be recognized and be able to be paid for services. And that's outside of your standard like MTM consultation, comprehensive med review type session. This is actually having pharmacists get paid for true interventions, direct interventions, almost fee for service in that regard. And so, that's where I think even in a state like Tennessee, we can see some more movement in that regard. But I think it for any pharmacist that's working with their patients probably know that your standard Medicaid beneficiary is sometimes the most vulnerable population that you can really make a difference in their life. And so, I think it's a lot easier type of message to pitch to your state Medicaid programs that the work that pharmacists are doing are actually saving lives. We need to recognize and pay them for it. And so that's where I think, and probably why we're having better success with some of our state Medicaid programs. And then the more and more we can see done at the state level for Medicaid reimbursement, for commercial plans, this then makes this bigger ask. It creates this groundswell that we can really move CMS and Medicare at the federal level to recognize pharmacists in the Social Security Act. So, I do think we still need more to occur at the state level that I think will continue to carry that message. But I still feel like we're a boiling pot of water that's ready to start really getting to that point where we can see it done at the federal level. So again, I don't want to jinx myself, but I do think we're getting there.
What would provider status mean for pharmacists' abilities, for their ability to be paid, and for patients?
I think what it really does is, provider status, I think it means a lot of different things to a lot of people, but what ultimately it comes down to is it really starts shifting the pharmacy business model to be a more service-based model. Right now, we all know the majority of how pharmacies make money is from the dispensing of medications, from making a small amount of profit from just the purchasing and sale of a medication to the dispensing of that. That's where pharmacies make money. But as we start seeing more and more of these opportunities on the service side by being recognized as providers, I think it really starts making pharmacies rethink about how much they invest in their staff time, their technology, how they engage with their patients, what that experience really looks like when they come into, say, a local community pharmacy, or even if it's into a physician practice that employs pharmacists. There's going to be a real shift in, I think, the healthcare system by letting pharmacists do this more, and really letting those skills and the knowledge of a pharmacist be on full display to the public and to other healthcare providers. So the shift will I think have rippling effects across everywhere, but I think it'll really have an ultimate change in the traditional community-based model, and let community pharmacies really start being seen as a service destination instead of just a product-based destination for pharmacy services.
Definitely. Was there anything you want to add or anything that I didn't think to ask about? There doesn't have to be, but.
I'm trying to think what else. I think what I would just offer is for whoever's reading and listening, however, I guess this is dictated, is just get involved. I always preach to new graduates and student pharmacists and really anybody that it's so important to get involved locally first and foremost. There's usually many times local pharmacy associations that are a mechanism for people to get connected with other pharmacists outside of the four walls of your community pharmacy, four walls of your hospital, and start having these conversations locally about what we can do better. And then from there, that grows into and hopefully creates confidence to get more involved at the state level. So everybody should be involved in their state pharmacy association. And then from there, that bleeds into how we actually support and drive efforts nationally as a profession. So it starts locally, but it builds. So I encourage everybody, get involved locally, join your state pharmacy association, join a national pharmacy association as well, and let's help really drive change in our profession.
Definitely wonderful. Thank you so much for talking to me about all of this. We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we did. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will be joined by another key opinion leader in the pharmacy space.